I'm pulling my driveway.
We all know what that means.
It's time to drive to work. Okay, so today my topic is colorless. Now, I've had a couple podcasts before on colorless. I had Ben Weitz, who at the time was the counselor of colorless on the Council of Colors, and we talked philosophy of colorless. And I did another podcast on how to design for colorless. But today is on the history of colorless. So we're going to talk through about why we do colorless, how it came about, and sort of how it's evolved over time. It's an important tool in our tool belt. And so today we'll talk all about it. Okay, so colorless goes all the way back to Alpha. So Richard Garfield was making magic, and he knew that one of the things that he wanted to have was powerful artifacts. That, you know, that magical items are as ingrained into the history of fantasy as anything. And that he knew that he wanted the players as planeswalkers, as mighty wizards, to have access to these artifacts. And the idea he came up with was that it'd be cool if anybody had access to it, like a magical item. You know, if you're learning magic, maybe you have to learn blue magic to cast a blue spell. But if I have a powerful whatever magical item I have, an orb or a sword or some magical thing, well, anybody could use that, right? So Richard came up with the idea of what if the artifacts just use generic mana. Now, obviously, generic mana had been made already for the game, that most cards that cost more than one mana, you know, had some amount of generic mana in them. You know, Prodigal Sorcerer was two generic mana and a blue. And so generic mana already existed as a concept. In fact, real quickly, a little side, because it's a podcast and I can share like this. When Richard originally did mana costs, he actually didn't include generic costs. The way it worked originally is there would be a number followed by some amount of colored mana. So if you saw, so for example, Prodigal Sorcerer, instead of being two generic mana and one blue mana, would say three and then have a blue mana. And what that meant is you have to pay three for this, one of which had to be blue. That was very confusing to people. And so they ended up with a system of, okay, I'll tell you how much colored mana you have to cast, and then I'll tell you how much colorless mana you had to cast. And so that's sort of where generic mana came from. So in early Magic, basically every card type, other than land and artifacts, was colored. Instants and sorceries and interrupts in the beginning were colored. Enchantments and creatures were colored. No planeswalkers yet. So everything else was colored, but artifacts kind of were defined by their colorlessness. That Richard had made a decision early on that sort of how you define color is look to the mana value of the card. Like if it costs red mana to cast the card, well, it's a red card. And because artifacts didn't have a color in them, okay, we have to define them. What are they? Well, they're colorless. Now, regular readers of my blog will know, this comes up all the time, colorless is not the sixth color. Colorless is not a color. Colorless is the absence of color. The line I use all the time, if people who read my blog, is barefoot is not a shoe, not a type of shoe. The idea is barefoot means I have no shoes on, not that it's a kind of shoe. Colorless means you have no color. So there isn't a particular philosophy, it's just the lack of something. And so while we do, and you can listen to my podcast with Ben, where we talk about how we handle colorless and sort of the philosophy of colorless, but it is not, colorless does not act like the five colors. It is different from that. And once again, it is not a color, it's the absence of color. So let me get into lands real quick before we move on. I think Richard decided early on that things that were, in order to be colored, you had to actually cast it. You know, that you had to spend the colored mana. A red spell requires red mana. And lands didn't do that. Lands, you didn't have, like, I could have a deck of nothing but blue cards, and I can put a mountain in the deck if I want to. There's nothing, and I can put the mountain into play. You know, that lands function very differently than, especially basic lands. Alpha, for those who don't know, there were the 5 basic lands, and then there were the 10 dual lands that tap for either color. But the only lands in Alpha just tap for mana, either 1 mana or 2 mana. In fact, the dual lands were just both types mixed together. So the dual lands were just sort of mixed basic lands, and they're not technically basic. And so Richard made the decision that, okay, they're colorless because they're not really, they're not a color by definition of how we do color. So lands were also colorless. So when Magic started, colorless was a thing. All artifacts were colorless. All lands were colorless. And that really, for much of Magic, set the standard. You know, for a long time, the idea was if you were an artifact, you were colorless. And if you were colorless, you were an artifact. And that just kind of went in lockstep for quite a while, in fact. It's not until, I believe, Future Sight that we make a card that is colorless but does not have a generic mana cost. That card is, of course, Ghostfire. So basically, we were doing Future Sight. We made what we called the Future Shifted Seat. Each set in the Time Spiral block had a bonus sheet. It was the first set of bonus sheets, and each one of them leaned to the theme. So it originally came up because Time Spiral, we thought it'd be cool if occasionally you opened up old cards in your booster. And not just old cards, but old cards in the old frame. Like, it was just sort of this dip into the past. And we so enjoyed that. When we did Planar Chaos, the second set, that was all about sort of alternate reality, where we changed the color pie and what if Magic was different. So there, what we did on the bonus sheet there is we took classic cards of Magic that we felt we could move into another color. The poster child was Damnation, which was just Wrath of God, but in black. And redid cards and reconstituted. Like, what if Wrath of God had originally been a black card? And so that was the bonus sheet. So future shifted bonus sheet, the idea there was it had each set had a different frame. The Time Spiral had the old frame at the time. We just changed the 8th edition frame. Planar Chaos had this sort of alternate reality frame, which was based on, there was one point we were going to change Magic, and we ended up not changing it, but we used a lot of those frame elements in Planar Chaos. And then Future Sight, we sort of look at what could a future shift, and we changed like where the mana cost was, and you know, we added in symbols for the land types. We just did, for the card types. We just did a bunch of stuff. They're like, well, maybe in Magic's future, we could do this. And the idea of the future shifted seat was, the future shifted sheet, that's hard to say, was that we wanted to hint at potential futures. We didn't really want to show a lot of things that were just brand new you've never seen, but more take things that you have seen and show how we might do them in different ways. So one of the ideas, which was interesting to me, was what if we had a colorless card that wasn't a generic mana card? That was what. The idea of Ghostfire was it was a direct damage spell, and it cost red mana to cast, but it was colorless. So you couldn't stop it with the circle protection red, and it could kill a creature with protection from red. That it was red, sort of, and then it required red to cast. Obviously, this card would be the precursor of lots of things. It would be the precursor of the Devoid mechanic. It would be, it introduced Ugin for the first time. Ugin was just like flavor text on the card. We didn't know who Ugin was when we wrote that flavor text. And that would spawn Ugin. It would spawn the Eldrazi on some level. Like, there's a lot of things it did that inspired a lot of stuff. It definitely hinted at things. The first time we really did colorless without artifacts. So we were working. So the original plan for Zendikar, original trip to Zendikar, was the first two sets we set on Zendikar, big set, small set, and the third set in the block, which would be a large set, would be set on a completely different world with all the mechanics. So the idea was, we were really playing around with like how blocks function, and we had done this experiment where we had done Shadowmoore and it had been large, small, do too many blocks. And it's the first time we had done a large set outside the fall, and it sold well. And we're like, you know, we could do more large sets. And so the idea was, Bill Rose was very enamored by the idea of, okay, what if we do large, small, large, but the large is different. It's not just more of the same thing. And you can see a lot of the early sort of understandings of what else can blocks be, or maybe the eventual move away from blocks. You can see the seeds of it here, right? What if we had a large set that's by itself and had its own mechanics and wasn't tied to the rest of the block? The problem was our creative team at the time wasn't very big, 4 people, 5 people. And they're like, look, we just don't have the resources to make 2 worlds. I mean, now we're much more staffed up. We do have those resources. But at the time, we didn't have those resources. And so they said, what if we made some event that happened on, we stay on Zendikar, but the event is so, so monumental. It fundamentally changes the world so much that with a straight face, we can just do all new mechanics. And so they went back, they looked at the world guide, and there's these hexagons that I think Mark Tadine had done during the world building. There's these floating hexagons. They're really cool looking. And they're like, well, what if those have some function? What if they are not just there to be there? What if they were something? And then the creative team came up with this idea of, well, what if it represented a prison? What if there were these ancient beings that had been trapped? And the reason Zendikar is sort of reacting the way it is because of this ancient being trapped inside. And so they worked this whole thing out. And I know that Brian Tinsman, who ran Rise of the Eldrazi, was a huge fan of like Cthulhu and the sort of cosmic horror, and really was enamored by the idea of could the Eldrazi tap into that sort of that feel of cosmic horror. And so the idea is we really leaned into, okay, the Eldrazi are a couple things. One is they're these ancient beings, ancient beings. Two, they're gigantic. And three, they're kind of alien and unfathomable. We had done the Phyrexians, and the Phyrexians, the thing we liked about the Phyrexians were you understood their motives. Their motives was to spread. They were a disease. And not that you could reason with them. You couldn't reason with them. But at least you understood the motivation of what they're doing. We liked having a villain that was just sort of, you didn't quite understand what they were up to. But I will say, okay, now we're going to make a magic set, and we have to make these creatures, okay, they're giant, they're alien, they're really old, and they're inscrutable. What does that mean? But one of the ideas we lean into is, okay, maybe the tool we need here is colorless. And the idea was they were ancient, right? They predated colored magic. Well, the colorless was great, right? The reason they don't have color in them is they're so old that they don't even connect it. Colored mana wasn't a thing yet. And because other than, you know, the one future sight card, like, we had so entwined artifacts to colorless that doing colorless and not doing artifacts just felt a little bit transgressive. Like, well, oh my, what are we doing? And it really sort of, I mean, it was an interesting tool that we realized, I think for many years, we just thought of colorless as, like, artifacts are colorless as artifacts. That's just lockstep. And I think we realized, you know, they don't have to be connected. We could disconnect them. And that was really powerful. And it allowed us to make a through line that was just very impactful and very much in the cards. Like, one of the things that's important is you want to find ways to define your, whenever you make an important, like, race, or you know, a species, you know, like, and these were villains, and anyway, we want to make sure that they had an identity, right? And giving them colors as an identity really, in a very simple, primal way, makes them feel unique and their own thing. And so, mostly, colors became, like, we came up with a new way to do colors, which was, okay, colorless is a tool in our toolbox that is, artifacts and colorless are separate things. Yes, you can do them together. You don't have to do them together. And that was really eye-opening. Now, like I said, if you listen to the podcast with me and Ben, there's a lot of rules about how to do rates for colorless cards. You don't want to usurp cards. One of the things we did with the Eldrazi is we leaned into weird things. So we leaned into things that weren't really defined in the color pie, like caring about even and odd, like no color cares about even or odd. So we would find like little nibbets of things that were weird so that we can do them there. Okay, a couple other things happened around this time, shortly after this, but I just wanted to sort of talk about the mirroring of colorless and artifacts. Not only did we break colorless from artifacts, we also started breaking artifacts from colorless. In fact, in Future Sight, not only do we have a colorless card with not a generic mana cost, we had an artifact that had colored mana. It was a little mirror, it was a little corrupted mirror, a little hint of things to come unmirrored in, for those who are paying attention. And I kind of understood in Future Sight that those paths, like, it's interesting. I saw in Future Sight, like, one day we will have colorless without artifacts, and one day we'll have artifacts without colorless. That was all called shots from Future Sight, which came to be. We eventually did colored mana. We were doing Shards of Alara. And so the way Shards works is it was five, like, mini worlds. It was broken apart. And each world had one color and its allies, but not its enemies. So one of the colors was Esper. In fact, this was the mini team I led. And Esper was a world in which it's all about sort of potential, about growth. Or not, growth is green, but like sort of finding your potential. And so the world of Esper was very much about artifice and, you know, you can improve yourself. So creatures were inventing things and changing body parts and sort of upgrading themselves, becoming almost cyborg-ish, although a little more fantasy than sort of more cyborgs are very sci-fi. We just sort of our fantasy take on it, you know, with ether and stuff. But anyway, we needed to find a way to give a definition to the Esper. And the idea that we came up with that I really liked was, what if all the creatures were artifacts? But we still needed them to be their colors because it was a three-color set. So for the first time, we used colors on color artifact on colored cards. Interestingly, by the way, if you look at Future Sight, I knew we were going to eventually make colored artifacts. I thought it was going to be the first time we returned to Mirrodin and Phyrexia overtook Mirrodin, because we had planned that, obviously. That's why Future Sight's kind of hinting at that. But we really needed it in Esper. I'm like, well, no one's saying we can't do that when we go back to Phyrexia. And so we, for the first time, made colored artifacts. And then I will say with time, when we went to New Phyrexia, we did do some colored artifacts. We went to, like, Kaladesh. There was a cycle of colored artifacts. Theros had some colored, I think they were artifacts and enchantments, but they were artifacts as well, like the god's equipment, the god's, you know, the Nylea's bow and stuff. So anyway, there definitely is this divergent path coming where colorless and artifacts start becoming independent tools. We still, another thing that was important, I guess, to bring up here is after Kaladesh, things kind of, we had made a bunch of artifact sets over the years. We made original Mirrodin, that caused problems. We made Scars of Mirrodin, that caused problems. We made Kaladesh, that caused problems. That whenever we had a strong artifact theme, we'd run into play design problems, except we didn't happen during Shards of Alara with Esper. Esper didn't have that problem. What's going on here? And that's when we realized that one of the challenging things about colorless is when you give something in colorless, you're giving everybody access to that thing. And that it just becomes a lot harder to do new things where you're at all pushing things because, like during original Mirrodin, we had a problem where things were so broken that we had to ban, I think, 8 cards at one point. Like, it had the problem called the blob, which is because everybody had access to all the powerful, you know, colorless stuff, like, you could remove some of it and just got replaced by other stuff. Like, and because it was a lot of the broken stuff was colorless, like, so many of the decks were playing similar things. The whole reason we have the color pie is we want the definition. And so that is one of the challenges of Colorless. We want to give identity to it, but we don't want everybody playing it. And so it is hard to make really powerful artifacts if just everybody can put it in their deck. We can make narrow artifacts. So it's not that we can't make colorless artifacts. We can. They just have to be very niche in what they do. It's hard to make a universally useful, powerful colorless artifact. We can make one like, I did this thing, and if you want this thing, I'm great. But not everybody wants this thing. So that side of stuff is fine. We also use it a lot for limited. There's a lot of just general functionality we need. It's easier at common if we make some colorless things, and then anybody who needs it, like, we normally make something that goes and fetches you a land. Okay, that's important and limited. We want you to get your colors. We'll make a colorless card that does that. Anybody can play it. So basically the first use of colorless is the Eldrazi. And we make a lot of use of it. We make a lot of cards. And in a lot of ways, we sort of did what we had done with artifacts. People were like, well, colorless means artifacts. Oh, not just artifacts. Colorless means artifacts or Eldrazi. That's what colorless means. And then along comes Conspiracy. So Conspiracy was a set made by Sean Main. Sean had this idea for a set where you drafted it, and there were cards that cared about the draft, cards that affected the draft, and then you played, it was a multicolored draft environment that at the time was not a thing. And so you could draft, and because you could draft, your cards cared about the draft, and then you usually play like a four-person multiplayer game. Now, in it, one of the core elements of the set Conspiracy were conspiracies. So the idea of conspiracies are, these are things that you draft that you get to have some input in, and then you get to put them in your deck. And the idea is, when you draft them during the draft, because you're aware that you can make certain decisions, and that these cards get to go in your deck, you can sort of draft around them. That conspiracies are designed such that they lead toward more linear themes, but linear themes that you have some flexibility with. And in order to maximize the use of those, he put many of them, not all of them, were colorless. And so the idea is that we just want to maximize access. And that's another important thing we realize about colorless as we sort of advance over time, is the utility of colorless. The fact that anybody who needs it can play it. While it can be a downside, or not a downside, it can be a challenge from a balancing perspective, it is a boon from a design perspective. Like, for example, I'm making a limited environment and I need people to have access to something. I can make it colorless, and then everybody playing the draft has access to it. You know, Sean needed to make, wanted people to be able to play conspiracies in lots of different decks. Colorless gave access to that. So then we get to Battle for Zendikar. That is when I sort of call forth Ghostfire and we make Devoid. Originally, Devoid was not supposed to be a mechanic. What happened was we had done Rise of the Eldrazi. We'd seen the Eldrazi. That set was just full of lots of colorless Eldrazi stuff. Then we were coming back and we knew we had to do a whole block. It turned out, ended up being a large, smaller than we had. We didn't know this when we first started the block. It ended up being two sets, not three sets. But it was kind of this was the thing that changed midway from being a three set to a two set. And so we're like, look, we just can't make that many colorless cards. And that we said, okay, what exactly, because we were coming back to Zendikar and we left on a cliffhanger, we thought we needed to return to the cliffhanger. Okay, it's the denizens of Zendikar fighting the Eldrazi, but we need to represent the Eldrazi. And yeah, we could have some large colorless things, but that can't be most of the set. That can't be common. There's like so much of that we can do. And so I remembered back to Ghostfire and said, oh, well, what if we kept the colorlessness as a quality? That's one of the defining qualities of Eldrazi. They're colorless, but some of them could have color cost. The idea of some of the offspring and stuff could have color cost. So that way, we could make a balanced magic set. We could lock things in the color that we needed to, but we still give an identity to the Eldrazi, and we could do stuff like colorless matters, which could be fun. Like we could do things that tie the Eldrazi together through their colorlessness theme. Originally, we weren't going to keyword Devoid; it just said it on the card, and then it ended up being easier in the rules to keyword it. With 2020 hindsight, I wish we had made it a super type with rules baggage rather than a keyword. The problem with it being a keyword is it just really doesn't do anything It's like, hey, I'm a new keyboard. What do you do? I don't have color. Like, it's just not particularly compelling as a mechanic. I understand, like, we needed it structurally. But anyway, that's us using colorless sort of combined with colored mana. Meaning, once again, colorless and generic mana don't have to be tied one for one. That's the big lesson of today, is there are a lot of component pieces that can be separated. So basically we went back for Battle for Zendikar. We then went to Innistrad and we learned that Emrakul had gotten there. And so in Eldritch Moon, we had a whole bunch of double-faced cards to transform into colorless cards to represent the influence of Eldamri. Not Eldamri. That's an elf, Emrakul. Okay, then there was a conspiracy to take the crown. So they did more conspiracies, they did some hidden agendas, just more things that wanted the openness and freeness of the colorlessness. I jumped past this one. In New Phyrexia, we decided we wanted to make a planeswalker card out of Karn. And when we originally made the original ones in Lorwyn, we had talked about, like, a Johnny is a cat. Should he be a cat planeswalker? And I'm like, well, no. That's a creature subtype. He's not a creature, he's a planeswalker. And you know what we said? Like, his planeswalkerness kind of transcends other qualities of him. And so we decided not to make Karn an artifact. He's an artifact in flavor, I guess, but and from a balance standpoint, making planeswalkers other card types just opened up to a lot of potential issues. And so we avoided that. And so Karn was the first colorless planeswalker. We were going to make more. There's some Ugin, more Karns and stuff. But the idea is that we have the ability to represent, even like Karn's a good example where he's an artifact from story, but we can represent him through colors. So colors allows us to do that. Okay, then Modern Horizons started playing around a little bit more with some colorless stuff. You see, like, Morph on the Boundless and other stuff where we're, like, that was a card where I wanted, a lot of players had asked for help for, they want a commander for the creature type they like. And we added a bunch of stuff, like, we put a bunch of Slivers and Changeling, or not Slivers, not right, we put a bunch of Changelings. Slivers played well with Changelings. We put a bunch of Changelings into the set and then made a lot of one of cards that care about specific creature types so that you could play them. But then I wanted to make a card just for all the ones we didn't make. And so I'd made sort of a generic creature lord called Morvan. But he wanted to be colorless, once again, so that anybody could play him. He didn't really need to be an artifact, so we didn't make him an artifact. And what you start to see is you start to see occasional one-ofs, like in Commander 2020, there's Cryptic Tribalite, where it's this ancient creature, and they wanted to represent how old it was, so they made it colorless. So then we get to Strixhaven. So Strixhaven was playing around with Lessons Learned, which was a mechanic that got you cards from outside the game. And there's a similar thing going on where, you know, we only have so many lessons, and the more we lock lessons in the color, the trickier it is to have the right lesson, especially in limited. So what if we said, you know, the way the school works is you don't join a school till your second year. There's five schools, obviously. The five factions are the five schools. But the first year it's not till your second year that you pick what school you belong to. So we thought, oh, well, what if we have a bunch of intro classes and we made those colorless? And then some of those could be the lessons that you could use. So, and there was a little pushback at the time of, well, colorless, that's Eldrazi. Like, well, it's a tool. Strixhavens could use the tool. There's nothing inherent to colorless. I mean, yes, we define the Eldrazi by being colorless, but we don't find colorless by being the Eldrazi. Obviously, there's colorless artifact creatures, and we had done one or two colorless things like Karn, like the Cryptic Trilobite, like we had done. And so really what we said is, look, this is a tool. We need to treat it as a tool. If Strixhaven needs it, Strixhaven gets to use it. And I think Strixhaven did a good job of really sort of introducing the idea that, look, you'll see this in different places. You can see colorless cards that aren't artifacts, that aren't Eldrazi. And that Strixhaven really helped cement that in a larger way, just because one-ofs don't do as good a job. It's something where it's showing up in a bunch of places. And so we did that. And then kind of the future of call list was really defined by, like, once we opened up the door, once we said, okay, you can make a call list thing. I mean, you have to watch the rate and you have to be careful. Like, much like anything that's call list, whether it's an artifact or not, you know, things with generic mana, things that don't have a color in them have some balance issues that we have to worry about. But it just allows us to do a lot of cool things. I remember, like, in Infinity, we had a card that you got to go get things, standard bearer, that you can get stuff that's in standard. And, like, oh, you copy things that are in standard. But, like, the idea is we like it being open-ended. They can get whatever you want. And so, you know, making the base thing colorless made a lot of sense. Doctor Who, Clara was colorless. We made a pack that was colorless in Marvel. In Murders of Karlov Manor. In Foundations, for example, we made Siren of Seven Deaths. And that's the reason it's in Foundations is really interesting to me. This is the set that kind of defines what Magic can be. And we felt it was important to put a colorless creature in there that wasn't an artifact, that wasn't, I don't think it's an Eldrazi. Maybe it's an Eldrazi. It might be an Eldrazi. But we wanted to introduce this idea that colorless creatures are a thing. Or not just colorless creatures. Colorless magic is a thing. I think when you look at the evolution, is it started with a very narrow use set. And then with time, we just realize, hey, it's pretty flexible. And I think that the challenge of colorlessness is, I mean, the huge upside is the universality of it is great. Sometimes you need every deck to have access to something, and you don't want to have to make five of them. You know, I mean, often we'll make cycles of things, but sometimes you're just like, you know what? I really need everybody to have access to this. If I just make a colorless, everybody gets access. It helps a lot in sealed for, like, pre-releases. And it just, for more casual players that might not have access to as many cards, we can put something like this at common and just more people have access to it. But the downside is you have to be careful with it, as our mini artifact set showed. If you are too aggressive and too general in your use of colorlessness, you can make broken environment. So it is something we have to be very careful with. Although the Eldrazi also did a good job of, hey, we themed it, we made it very specific in what it was, and there were Eldrazi decks that used them, but not every deck just ran the colorless cards. So we have learned how to use them. And, you know, the future of colorlessness is any set that I guess I would call it evergreen. I guess there's very few sets that have zero colorless cards in them. So let's call it evergreen. But the reality is any set who wants to use it, it's a tool. There are some rules for using the tool, and there's some guidelines and such, but any set that needs it can have it. And I'm sure in the future, we will find something else where we're like, you know, we need to tie it together in some way. And the thing that does it cleanest and simplest is colorless. The one thing, by the way, I'll leave with my one little funny story. I just got here to work, but I'll leave with a little funny story at the end. The one challenge, the biggest mistake we keep making with colorless, is that when we made the colorless frame, we decided it would be cool if we did full art and bleeded it through. So if you've ever seen the colorless frame, it's not normal. Normal Magic art has art at the top and then the rule text box, there's no art behind it. But a colorless card has art behind the whole thing. It's different. It gives it a different look. And it's cool. It's a cool addition. But whenever you make a colorless card, you have to remember that the art ratios are different. They're not the same. And I've told the story once before, but I will tell it again. So we make a card in Infinity. We wanted to make a colorless saga. The greatest show in the multiverse is what the card is called. We wanted to make a colorless saga. The reason we wanted to call this is that you went and got certain cards. We wanted it to be open so anybody could get whatever they wanted. It was colorless because it wanted to be for the function of the card. And then we get the art in. It's this real cool looking saga picture. And then we realize, like, late in the process, wait a minute, this can't be colorless. We didn't do the right art ratios. And so the last minute, I ended up making it from just a colorless enchantment to a artifact enchantment. Because if we did that, we could use the artifact frame, which we did have, and then we could keep the art as drawn. We loved the art. The art came out very beautiful. We could keep the art. And anyway, I always use that example of how there's all sorts of challenges and things you don't think about. And that is one of colorless's thing that we've made this mistake multiple times. Colorless has a different art ratio. Got to remember that. Okay, guys. Today, that was our walk through the history of colorless. Hope you guys enjoyed it. But I'm at work, so we all know what that means. It means it's the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.